Hi, and welcome to this week's thrilling episode of Security Nation, the podcast where we talk to cool and interesting people doing cool and interesting things to advance security in, you guessed it, cool and interesting ways. Whole thing. I am your host. I am Rapid7's VP of Community and Public Affairs, Jen Ellis. And with me is my amazing co-host, Mr. Todd Bisley. Toddsley, how you doing?
Ahoy, ahoy. I'm doing great. I am currently sweltering in my garage, or as we call them in America, the car hole.
It never gets cold. I love it. Imagine it's warm there. I am experiencing a very strange but very enjoyable sort of weird summer. Like the UK is having summer. What is happening? And I am living in an attic, as we have previously discussed. So it is quite warm where I am.
By the end of this podcast, we will both be melted down into puddles of sweat, 6,000 miles apart.
So nice. So our guest today is Kenny Bezuris, who is the CEO and founder of Looted Security, but is also just super security famous. Katie is a super accomplished speaker. She has edited or written two ISOs, two of them, people, two. I've barely read two ISOs. It's a huge undertaking. And she's done all sorts of other amazing things. I'm not going to prattle on about her forever because that's awkward and she's listening. So instead, I'm going to say, hi, Katie, welcome for joining us.
Hi.
It's so great to see you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm not in hot weather because I live in the Pacific Northwest and it pretty much rains almost all the time.
Maybe global warming can help you too.
You know, it helped us by having wildfires and smoke from British Columbia
coming down. That's not the kind of help you were looking for.
No. Yeah.
Do you think it's awkward if we mention that we're engaged to be engaged? Should we not bring that up? Do you think that's weird?
I think we should bring that up. I think that's something that the public needs to know and prepare themselves.
The inquiring public wants to know why we're engaged and we're engaged. Well, firstly, because I have commitment issues, but that's a whole separate topic. Yes, it's because you are going to run for the White House in 2024.
Right, and obviously you can't do that if you're single.
I mean, there's never been a single president.
Not electable.
Right. So instead, we're remedying that with one of my best friends in the universe, and that's you, Jen. And, America needs a sweary British first lady, I think.
Uh-huh. What could it be better? Let's get the Brits back in the White House. I feel like this might actually, we might get complaint letters after this podcast. Never mind. People are suddenly like, well, I was all right with the fact that you were sweary and that you're stupid, but now you've gone too far. There'll be no Brits back in the White House. Okay, so Katie, I have a question for you before we get stuck into talking about Looter, which I really want to hear all about. You have done a lot of stuff. We might have mentioned that a few times. I'm very intrigued by what, of all the things that you've done professionally, you are proudest of.
Yes, that is a good question. I would have to say professionally, I'm most proud of bringing a gender discrimination lawsuit against Microsoft. And we were going for class action. It was not class certified, even though bizarrely all of the data pointed to the fact that pay and promotion equity were not occurring at the company. And, my individual case is still ongoing. We'll see how that works out. But, you know, watching my mom, a single mom, a scientist, struggling to pay the bills when she was training men who were less qualified than her. Obviously, she was training them. And then they would go on to make twice as much. And the fact that, you know, she died before she could, you know, really receive the pay and promotions that she deserved and earned in her career. So to me, pay and promotion equity is a core value of mine. And it's something that I wove into company culture at Looter. And we've already had an instance where we found we were paying somebody less than what they should have been paid, and we corrected it and we gave them back pay. So for me, this is a super important issue, and professionally it's something that I'm proud of. And even though I had to, you know, take that fight on alone, and now it's kind of going back to me being alone with that fight, it's still to me, spoke to my values and it's worth it. Even if this particular run at justice wasn't fruitful in the way that we hoped it would be, you know, what is that phrase? The arc of the universe bends towards justice. So,
yeah.
That's pretty much what I'm going
for. And it's ongoing, right? Like you haven't lost or anything yet. So.
No, the case will continue until it doesn't. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's super brave to take on a giant corporation like Microsoft. Bravo to you for doing that. And also bravo to you for like living your own values and holding yourself accountable to the same standard at Luta.
Yeah, for sure.
That is awesome. It's good to hear about it. So let's hear about Luta. What was the genesis of it? Like, when did the company start? What are you guys focused on? We want to hear all about it.
Well, I started Luta Security about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, and it was right after launching Hack the Pentagon, which was the first bug bounty program of the U.S. Department of Defense.
It was a very cool program.
Yeah, you know, and the DoD is still running bug bounty challenges and is still, more importantly, running an ongoing vulnerability disclosure program. Because as we all know, those of us who have been in the vuln disclosure trenches, it's really, you know, it's not just about offering cash for certain bugs. It's really about having a strong process to receive and remediate any bugs that are sent to you, you know, especially with security implications. So having a vuln disclosure program and functional vuln disclosure program, that's what those ISO standards that I co-authored and co-edited were all about.
Well, that's great. As I said, I've barely read two, so I wouldn't know.
Wait, so you're saying that people don't have to just invent their vuln disclosure programs out of whole cloth?
What?
Right. And that it's not just as simple as throwing up a web form or an email address. Like, you kind of have to have a process set up to deal with it. That would be like throwing a menu up, you know, in the front store window of a restaurant where you haven't actually built a kitchen or hired any staff, right? Cool. Seems like a bad idea. You know,
I feel like Todd is sort of gleefully right now, sort of rubbing his hands together, being like, "Yes, we're doing."
Yeah, I am going into the restaurant business apparently because this sounds hilarious. It sounds like a Charlie Chaplin movie, actually.
Well, I
assume that's what the back end of many baby vulnerability disclosures look like.
You know, an image that I use a lot, especially when I conjure up the imagery of what's gone wrong, right, in vuln disclosure and bug bounties in the last few years. I usually say the term bug bounty Botox because it's, you know, there nobody who's using bug bounties as a superficial fix that basically says, no, we take your security seriously. Look, we pay hackers. Nobody who does that, you know, they're not focusing on their inner beauty. And so I will say bug bounty Botox, but I'll often accompany it with an image of that animated gif of Lucy and Ethel in the chocolate factory. Right? And there's all this like chocolate, delicious chocolate coming down the belt too fast for them to process it. So when the bug bounty platforms say, oh, no, we take care of everything. It's just high quality bugs coming your way. We'll scrub all the spam and all the duplicates out. I'm like, yep, but who's helping Lucy and Ethel back in that chocolate factory? Because even if it's delicious chocolate, pure bugs, deliciousness, still have to have someone to deal with it, right? So
yeah, and I don't want to get too sidelined, but I will say, like, I definitely have an issue with the fact that, you know, we have started to get to a point where we're conflating vulnerability handling with bug bounty. They are not the same freaking thing. And this message that's being propagated that makes people feel that they are is so off-putting to organizations, and it makes it seem like such a Herculean task to have any kind of intake process, which is really unhelpful to make it scary to them. You want it to be something that they feel they can do, but it is also, to your point, it's missing the point, because it isn't hard to set up a way of receiving. It's hard to set up a way of handling once you've received, of triaging, of addressing, of fixing. So I agree with you. Like, I get very ranty about this, obviously. Like,
it's happening right now.
Yeah, you have witnessed this firsthand. And so it is very heartening to me when I hear you speaking about this and kind of helping people course correct on it and understand the reality of it. Thank you for what you do on that. And I want to just really quickly revisit Hack the Pentagon, because it was a really cool thing. And you were very involved with this. You were basically, you know, sort of in the driving seat for some of it. I don't want to make it sound like the Pentagon wasn't. Obviously they were. but yeah, do you want to just chat about that very quickly, and then we'll get back to Luta?
Sure. So I was still at Microsoft the first time I went to the Pentagon. I was invited by my friend Michael Solmeyer, who is amazing, and at the time he was the director.
Was
right? No, you know Mike Solmeyer.
Our date to a prom together.
Yes, our date to tech prom. Exactly. We like corsaged him and everything. So anyway, really good friend. But Michael Solmeyer was in the audience for a guest lecture that I was invited to do for a consortium between MIT Sloan School and Harvard Kennedy School. Now, why was I talking about bug bounties to this group of people? Well, because there was economic theory, game theory, all kinds of, you know, measured and balanced considerations for creating the Microsoft bug bounties. Because looking back, you know, Microsoft started, I started their bug bounties in 2013. And essentially, to this day, still, Microsoft receives sort of the biggest intake funnel of all vuln disclosure in the world. And I will probably, you know, I will still back that up. They receive over 200,000 non-spam email messages a year into Secure at Microsoft. And that's going strong. That was already happening before they started offering cash, right? So anyway, you had to take this huge problem, biggest software company in the world, distill it down to, well, if we're getting all these bugs for free, why do we need a bug bounty? Well, it was to focus the eyes of the friendly researchers who are already looking at when and what products you wanted them to focus on the most. So anyway, I was giving this guest lecture, MIT Sloan, Harvard Kennedy School, Michael Solmeyer's in the audience, and he says, please come give this briefing to the Pentagon. And I was like, that's amazing, because I had only ever been invited to the donut, which is the British Pentagon, but it's a donut, you know? And I was like, why has my own government not invited me to their sort of round and angular thing that is the intelligence, you know, center and whatnot? I was confused.
Seems reasonable. So yeah, Hack the Pentagon was a very cool program, and it's good to see the Department of Defense has sort of continued to build on it and invest and grow it. So let's get back to talking about Luta. Mm-hmm. So you were talking about the inception coming off the back of that program. So what does Luta focus on? What are you doing?
Well, we focus on helping Lucy and Ethel back there in the chocolate factory. We literally, we will measure the maturity of the operations taking place in the triage, handling, resolution decision, resolution creation, resolution testing, resolution release of vulnerabilities. So we're in the back of the restaurant. We're making sure that the kitchen has, you know, an oven, for example, and even more importantly, a sink to wash your hands, you know, and everything. So we go in and we do this maturity assessment, and then we give recommendations as to how they can get better and more efficient. Often we actually counsel our customers to avoid doing bug bounties for a while, because there are more efficient investments in security that they could be making. I hate seeing bug bounties where they're paying out a lot or even at all for low-hanging fruit bugs, which we already have plenty of tools and techniques and the know-how to not only prevent those classes of bugs, but detect them before you actually release the code. So we've really focused on appropriate investments in vulnerability prevention, vulnerability handling, vulnerability resolution. And yes, a bug bounty may happen as one of the items that we recommend and help organizations structure. But for example, the work that we did with the UK government was on structuring a repeatable, mature process for all vuln disclosure for the UK government. And they've been rolling it out ever since we helped them create that plan. So that's really what Luta Security does. And we're proud of the work that we do. We don't actually do any sales and marketing. Literally, we're like the Liam Neeson of vuln disclosure. It's like a particular set of skills that we've gained over a very long career.
I will find your bugs.
Yeah, I will. I will make sure you can fix them.
You've been going for how long now?
4 years. 4 years and change. I think it's like 4 years and 1 month old.
Awesome. And how are things going?
Things are amazing. So, we've been growing organically. We have no outside investors. So we're a truly bootstrapped company. Kind of a company built the old fashioned way, where you have to actually have profits in order to reinvest into the business and hire more people. So we are hiring right now, because we can, and because we have this organic growth and a strong customer base, you know, that basically, we're adding people faster than we can say yes to new contracts, which is a wonderful space to be in. And for us, we're focusing our business model on, you know, really sustainable business. So we basically will hire people contract at first, and if it's a mutual good fit, convert them to permanent employees of Luta, or they also have the freedom and labor mobility, which is, you know, a central value. Labor rights and workers' rights is a central value of mine and of our company. They actually have the right to work at the client site full time after the contract is over if they want to. And I think
that's shocking. Yeah, radical.
Well, it is radical. I mean, I'm a little wobby savvy. I am. But you know, but the thing is, like, we build it into the contracts up front saying, yep, you can poach our people for a, you know, a recruiting and restaffing fee. And the fact of the matter is, they basically get a masterclass in how to do vulnerability coordination appropriately. We've set them up for success, and this is what we're doing. We're doing this at Zoom, and we're gearing up to do this anywhere where people really just need hands-on in the trenches help, instruction, and then maybe if they're for some reason a better fit than Luta is, which, you know, they're going to have to fight me
seems unlikely, but okay.
But, you know, but hey, look, if there's a director position or something like that, that they, you know, there's no room for it yet at Luta and they want to take an opportunity someplace else, who am I to stand in the way of a worker getting what they deserve in terms of pay and promotion? So for me, living those values and staffing and hiring that way, it's basically the antidote to gig economy. You're not an employee, like, you're nothing to me, you know, all that stuff. I'm literally saying you could be everything to me. It just depends, right? And I think that, I don't know, investing and trusting people to work hard at what they're doing and not be distracted by, you know, the fact that they feel like they're trapped in this one mode of employment. I think all of these things are, you know, look, we're doing a lot of experiments. We're going against the typical startup norms where they justify underpaying people, saying, oh, we're just a little startup. It's like, well, then start up harder, you know? Yeah. Like, you can't
afford these people. Start up harder. So I heard you mention in passing there Zoom, and I don't know if you know, but I'm pretty sure that anyone who's ever listened to this podcast, or certainly since the lockdown, will know Todd has a blog. A little bit of an interest in Zoom's security bugbears, as you labeled it. So I'm sure that his ears also pricked up when you said the word Zoom. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing with them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were called up by the CEO last summer, right after a disclosure incident. My friend Jonathan had a little disclosure, disagreement with them, but actually it worked out really well. He and Zoom were very amicable through the whole thing. He just was like, look, I just wanted to see this bug fixed in 90 days. If you guys can't fix it, going to have to go public with it, because I think the public, you know, has a right to know, to be able to protect themselves. And all of that behavior is actually quite reasonable in disclosure, as we all know. But I think a lot of organizations and a lot of the media that hasn't really, you know, kind of been familiar with our world, they actually don't understand that, right? So that's when it started. And Eric, the CEO, had called us up and said, you know, everyone tells me that apparently you're the Liam Neeson of vuln disclosure. No, he didn't say that, but he got a lot of recommendations. So we started working with them, you know, probably, I think we kicked off like in December or something like that. But we were finishing up a maturity assessment, right, against our maturity model. And we were kind of putting the final touches on the final deliverable when coronavirus hit. And we saw a lot of, you know, a lot of disclosure stories around Zoom. And so, of course, we reached out. This is our area. We reached out and said, hey, folks, you know, we're working on wrapping this up, but do you need any more help? And they basically said, oh, yeah, if you know, if you want to come in.
God, yes. Yes.
No, but, you know, this is an area that it's one of the many areas they're focusing on in their 90-day security push, which I think that move was actually quite a good one for them, because it's not often in an organization's history that they pause all feature development that isn't security related.
Right.
And that's exactly what they've done here.
Yeah, so it's a bold move. I think, you know,
they got so popular overnight, they turned into a different threat model of an organization.
Completely.
They were, so they're getting, you know, basically they have gathered among, you know, all of us third party folks, they've gathered, you know, myself, Leah Kissner, who is amazing. She used to be Google's chief privacy officer to help with privacy concerns at a global scale, now that they are a global scale company. Alex Stamos is also advising them. Matthew Green, who is looking over their end-to-end encryption. And then a number of different professional penetration testing companies that we are so happy are there to help out. It's Trail of Bits, Bishop Fox, NCC Group, and we're just really, really happy to work with them. So basically what we're doing now.
It's kind of an all-star team that Zoom suddenly picked up.
Yeah. Well,
over the course, and maybe not even so suddenly, like it's, like you say, it's been over the course of 9 months or so, right?
Yeah.
But then they had their explosive growth, in the space of a month. You know, they went from what, like 10 million to like 200 million active dailies. That's or good. Something.
They so. Literally went from that, from 10 million to 200 million within a couple of weeks. Like yeah. they did not actually have any time to readjust their corporate threat model before it was like, oh, it's all here. It's all happening,
Yeah.
But yeah.
So we're recording this toward the end of May. And I believe that puts them, where are we now on their 90-day cycle?
We are actually recording this over Zoom.
We are sort of dog fooding this whole thing, but and I like Zoom. I use Zoom for anything I can. But anyway, so we're recording in the end of May. So I think that puts us we're like in day 40-ish or so of their 90-day. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. I think it ends somewhere in July, like that. Yeah.
So.
But yeah.
And it seems like I see the updates and I read the release notes, and every once in a while there's something that sneaks in that doesn't feel like security. Maybe it's covering some other security thing. Like what was the one I saw the other day? It was change the sound for the waiting room notification. It smelled security, but it was still funny.
No, I mean, if you think about it, that's a security issue. It's security and privacy issue and expectations. Right. So a lot of the changes that I've noticed are around, what is the reasonable expectation that you would have of security and privacy? And they've been making updates to actually highlight certain things. They've been making updates that will turn on certain security features by default. And, and also they're forcing mandatory updates, to upgrade their end-to-end encryption as they're, as they are incrementally redesigning it, right? And I believe, tomorrow, the 22nd of May, they're going to be releasing a white paper that is a high-level design white paper, and they're doing a request for public comment. And I think that's a really smart thing to do. You don't want to implement a new end-to-end encryption solution that preserves functionality, right? That's obviously why everybody jumped on Zoom, is because it just works, Right. But you don't want to push out a design or push out an implementation of a design that hasn't been fully vetted. And as we like to say, from when I was a pen tester, if you're gonna roll your own crypto, don't smoke it, right?
Well, and you could do worse than a team of like you and Matthew Green and Trail of Bits, and like you've got a lot of like good crypto eyes on this thing.
Yeah, there's some pretty heavy hitters in that list.
Yeah, so we're just really happy that we're getting to participate at this really cool point in time in a company's evolution. And like we all say this, sort of semi tongue in cheek, but it's true. Security is a journey. This is not like something that every organization, every government instantaneously crawls out of the organizational womb knowing exactly how to deal with vulnerability reports, right? There's a maturity process, and that's really why we center our services around a maturity assessment and a roadmap. And how do we actually get people from a lot of low-hanging fruit, which we don't want to see in bugs in released code, right? That we, I retired from professional pen testing in 2007, 13 years ago, I retired from professional pen testing. So there's no excuse for vulnerabilities existing that I can still find, right? It's like 13-year-old tools and techniques and everything should be something that the organization manages to take care of themselves, not wait for somebody on the outside to point it out to them, right?
Absolutely.
Well, and also like at the end of this, right? Like they are not... There's no expectation that at the end of this 90-day security sprint, like all security is done and we're just tapping out and you know, come at me, bro. I don't imagine that's your plan.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, put it this way, that would be that would be an odd way to call a security program successful is to say that it's done. A security program is successful in that it evolves with the threats, and that's really that's why we're all here, you know.
That is very nicely articulated. I couldn't agree more. I just want to be clear, though, that I don't think I crawled out of a womb. I think it was just, I don't think that's how that works.
Just shot out.
Yes, fired out, right? Okay, I'm sorry, I made it more awkward. So I think we're sort of at the top of our time, and I know that, as we mentioned, you're a very busy person and you're going to have to leave us. Also, I am pretty much achieving puddle state, so I'm just going to like slither across the floor. But Katie, it was so great having you on, and it's so great to hear about the stuff you're working on. It's fascinating to get your take on Zoom, because normally all I get to do is hear Todd bang on about it. Nice to hear someone else bang on about it. I hope
nearly always positively, merely.
Yes. Oh, no, God. Absolutely.
We made the change that you suggested on Twitter. Well, putting the contact info at the bottom of the security page in addition to the top. So it's mirrored now. Check it out.
That impact. Check you out. I am proud of you. thank you for telling him that, Katie, because you have definitely made his day. That is awesome. So, so thank you very much for coming on. I hope that you will come back again sometime in the future. Good luck with Duta and with hiring. And with Zoom and the evolving situation there. We appreciate it.
It was a pleasure to be on with you guys, and I would love to do it again sometime. So let's make it happen. Maybe it'll be hot here and you guys will feel cool and I will be sweating.
We'll have bigger problems then, but okay.
Yeah, it's unlikely, but it would be great. all right, cool. Well, I am famous for being super awkward at the end of every interview, so this is perfectly normal. I just don't like goodbyes. What can I tell you?
We just have to headshot Jen and be done.
Just a tap, a double tap of route.
So Todd, on to the rapid rundown. And the question is, will we have more vulnerabilities to talk about this week? Dun, dun, dun.
Well, this week, for the rapid rundown, I think we're going to talk about one bug, one love.
Yeah, it still sounds like Queen to me.
No, you hate that? No, see, I'm trying to do it you too, and you're hearing Queen.
I mean, I got to say, like, if you had to be Bono or Freddie Mercury in my world, Freddie Mercury, hands down, is a winner.
Oh, yeah, times 100.
I cannot tell you how little time I have for him. And it's sad because I'm sure Bono listens and he's going to be deeply hurt by me saying this. But, like, seriously, come on.
Well, Bono probably doesn't care about this because it affects Samsung phones, not Apple phones. So,
right.
This bug.
You know that Freddie would have been Android all the way. Come on now.
Of course. Of course he would. So this is a bug. It was released. It was discovered and published by Google Project Zero. It was discovered specifically by Mr. Jerzyk. I have no idea how to pronounce his name.
I didn't show. Don't worry.
Nope. He's a member of Project Zero, and this is specifically CVE 2020-8899, which is kind of an easy to remember number. So I like
that. Yeah, it's quite good. Yeah.
8899. So this is a bug in the Samsung Quorum image processor that you can trigger via the MMS functionality, which for everyone else in the world is, so MMS stands for like multimedia message system or something like that. It's built on top of SMS, which we all know and love. It's texting. It's just basic old texting. So the short story is that you get a command shell. Basically, you get a remote code execution on Samsung phones, basically all of them, through a series of text messages, and that's it. Like, no user interaction required. User doesn't have to see them, they don't have to click on them, don't have to do anything.
That sounds no bueno, unless you're a bad guy, in which case it sounds
it is a kind of magic. So
I did appreciate that was nice. Well done, well played.
So like So yeah, it's kind of super bad. Now, because it's Project Zero, and because they haven't seen in the wild, like they did do, you know, all the normal coordinated vulnerability disclosure you'd expect. Samsung purportedly has a fix for this. So if you're on a Samsung phone, you're going to want to check for that. But it's Samsung. And so this is like the problem with Samsung and Android and that whole goofball ecosystem is that all of the patches to all the operating systems for Android, for any individual carrier, is gated by the handset manufacturer, which Samsung has already released the patch. Google, really the Android project, but it's basically Google. And then the phone carrier. So it all depends on who your carrier is. And there's, you know, there's dozens to hundreds of them. And so it depends on your, at this point, you're now dependent on your carrier to vet this patch and release it out. I hope they do it quickly because Project Zero is no joke. This is very unlike probably the last bug I got really excited about, which turned out to be kind of nothing. But this one is legit. There's a video that was released by the Discoverer that just shows it. And so, yeah, so you might think, oh, my God, this is super bad news. I get a magic text and I get owned. Not so fast. So according to the video, according to the video demo, anyway, the exploit takes about an hour and a half or so to exploit and results in like hundreds of text messages that you haven't read yet. So if you're in a meeting and you're getting hundreds of weird text messages.
That does seem like a bit of a weird, like, hi, I'm here.
Yeah.
It's not exactly stealth attack, is it?
It is unstealth. It is about the least stealth thing you can do. Unless, of course, you're asleep and you're not looking at your phone. And you're like a sane person and you turn off your notifications at night. So what I would suggest is that if you think you have this issue, then honestly, like, turn off your phone at night or put it in Wi-Fi mode without put it in airplane mode without Wi-Fi. It's really crazy.
If you get infected, uh-huh, then like, because you said there's an hour or whatever, like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. What do you do at that point? Do you just run around screaming?
Just run around screaming. Well, it's not entirely. So when the so when you get remote code execution, it's with the privileges of the Samsung Messages app, which is usually pretty good privileges. That thing usually has lots of reach. You've already given it permission to do a bunch of things like share photos, and, you know, obviously it can read your text because that's where all your texts come from. And so an attacker, honestly, this bug is like kind of tailor-made for law enforcement. Let's say I'm law enforcement and I've got a guy and I have his phone and I know the phone number. I could use this bug to just like read all the text messages and see all the stored pictures. You know, that's pretty much the use for this bug.
Wow, that's going to be some fascinating reading if you get into my phone. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just lots of lol and cats.
Yeah, lots of like, are we going to try and see mom? No, we're probably not going to try and see mom. And bear in mind, this is text messages between me and a person that is two floors below me.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, some really dynamite reading there.
It is, however, it is a shell. It is remote code execution. So there are probably there are hints of other privilege escalation vulnerabilities in messages that were not, you know, they're not published. They're just kind of like a theory at this point. We'll see. I mean, people are definitely going to be analyzing this bug in detail. Again, because it's Project Zero, there's like full-ish crash reports. So people have really good ideas of where to look to go repro this. So the clock is ticking on the manufacturers.
How does it work? So you get a text message.
You get several hundred text messages.
But you get a malicious text message, is that not?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And then do you have to take action for that text message to actually have effect?
Nope.
Or is it just having it on your phone is bad?
Just on the lock screen, totally works. Like no interaction required.
Yeah, that does seem quite bad.
It's bad. It's the worst. It reminds me, I mean, it's a totally different bug, but it reminds me of the impact of the old stage fright bug by our friend JDuck. Stage fright was the bug that kicked me off of Android. I was in the exact same position. I was waiting for my carrier to give me the damn update. And I'm like, all right, forget it. I can't do this anymore. I'm getting an iPhone, because it would suck if I got owned. So and that's it. Like, so, I mean, the problem is not really Samsung, and it's not definitely not Google. You know, it's not a shoot the messenger kind of thing, but the problem lies in this mishmash of carriers and like all the like goofball janky stuff that they do with their Android, with their Android releases, all the changes they make to Android in order to push them to phones, which some of them, you know, I'm sure are legit. Some of them are kind of skis.
Yeah, but a lot like, of it's like, let's make it so that you always want to buy our product because it feels right. Familiar.
Yeah, and like it's the Candy Crush problem, right? Like it is the pre-installed Candy Crush or whatever that prevents this patch, this security patch from hitting.
Pre-installed Candy Crush seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my hobby horse. Check every day if you have this bug, and if you don't, put your phone like, and by the way, turning your phone off at night, it won't prevent you from getting owned. It's just like when you turn your phone on, you'll notice that you now just got owned. So, or you'll see all the messages start coming in. So that's the thing. You'll have a chance to stop it just by turning it off again, but that's it. Like you're kind of doomed at that point.
Yeah. So I guess like, the thing is to harass Samsung?
It's not so much Samsung, it's the carriers. So it's whoever your phone carrier is. You call their helpline, which you should be doing anyway, because you got to make sure that those customer support people are still employed during these troubled times.
Right.
And so you call customer support every day and say like, hey, there's a patch for CVE-2020-8899. Can I have it, please? And variations on that. Anyway, that's your happy news for the week.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for educating slash terrifying us, or rather me. As usual, it was very interesting. And I look forward to the next installment of the Rapid Rundown. So that just leaves me to thank our very special, the most special of all special guests. And obviously to thank you, Todd, Mr. Vidsley. And our amazing, wonderful producer, Bree, the patron saint of patience. Mm-hmm. And just to say, you know, until the next thrilling episode.